Leaders are all around us at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate, they risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Frank Wolf, former congressman from Virginia, and Jerry and Susie Wilson, chair in religious freedom at Baylor University. Hosting the conversation is Tom Hibbs, dean of the Honors College at Baylor University and director of Baylor in Washington, D.C.
Welcome to KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Tom Hibbs, talking today with Frank Wolf, former U.S. congressman from Virginia, and now the Jerry and Susie Wilson Chair in Religious Freedom at Baylor University. It's an honor to have you with us today, Frank, and to have you working with us here at Baylor.
Well, I'm glad to be here in Waco, and I'm glad to be connected to Baylor. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, you've had a long public career, and we're interested in hearing from you this morning about leadership. So if you could talk briefly, just to start off, about your background, your family, your early interests and ambitions, and how those led to your political career.
I was born in Philadelphia. My dad was a Philadelphia policeman, and my mom worked in a cafeteria. And my parents came from immigrant family, came from Germany on my father's side. I had always wanted to be in Congress. As a young kid, I stuttered very badly. I still stutter sometimes now, and I would tell people I wanted to be in Congress, and they would kind of laugh at me because they said you couldn't even speak before the class. And I would go to the library in Southwest Philadelphia, and I would read books about Washington, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, Lincoln, and I've always had this keen interest, and I used to tell people that I was going to run for Congress someday. I went to Ole Miss for 1 year. I went to Penn State, graduated from Penn State. And from there, went to Georgetown Law School, dropped out, went back, went in the Army, came back out, and finally graduated and went on and worked for the National Canners Association, and then worked for a congressman from Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And then in 1976, ran for Congress and lost. I'm married. My wife and I, we have 5 kids. We have 16 grandkids. Ran again in 1978. I lost again. And then I ran in 1980 again, actually. You know, not many people get that opportunity, and I did. And I kind of grabbed Ronald Reagan's coattails, and he pulled me right across the line, and I got elected.
Good, thank you. Let's go back for a moment to your childhood and this idea of wanting to run for Congress. Did that come primarily out of this reading of great American leaders, or what was the original inspiration?
Well, I think it's from the reading. No, nobody in my family had ever been involved in politics. My dad was a policeman. Obviously, you couldn't be involved in politics. My mom, worked in a cafeteria. There was a lot of talk, and my family were always interested in government. My dad would always read the papers. But I think it was from reading the biographies. Before I moved to Virginia, I think I knew more about Virginia before I ever got to Virginia, then even after I got there. I remember the first trip I went down on a class trip. We went to Mount Vernon. I can still remember reaching behind the door thinking maybe I would touch a spot that George Washington had touched. And so I think that was really kind of what focused me on the interest.
What do you think we can learn about leadership from those great examples in America's founding and throughout its history?
Well, I think we can learn a lot. I don't know that we have the leaders today that we had in those days, to be honest with you. I think they're there, but they're not in Washington. I think they're outside in little villages. But George Washington, you know, in those days, honesty, integrity, virtue, character. Stephen Covey wrote a book about, for the first 150 years of our country, they were the ingredients you look for leadership. I mean, George Washington, Valley Forge, George Washington, the Battle of Trenton, George Washington crossing the Delaware, down to 3,000 people. That was leadership. Now, it seems we look at, you know, does a person have a good smile? Do they have a good personality? And so I think we can learn a lot. I think one of the greatest president we ever had was George Washington. Second greatest president, President Lincoln. I mean, the leadership. And so I think we can learn a lot by looking. And they were presidents during very difficult times.
What did you learn in your two losses, your two failed attempts to run for office?
Well, persistence. Of course, I come from a blue-collar background. You know, my family, my dad always worked hard. When he was a policeman, he used to always do bricklaying. He had different jobs. But persistence, and if at first you try and it doesn't work out, keep trying again. And the second time after I lost, it was tough because when I used to run the third time, people would say, are you running again? Like, you know, you – and it would hurt. But I really believe that had I not stuttered, I would have never gotten elected to Congress because that gave me the drive and the determination and the ability to sort of – I could still hear the laughter in the classrooms of people laughing at me. And in the old days, people that stuttered got ridiculed. You can still remember the comedians on television kind of joking about it. So I think stuttering – in those days, it didn't seem like it was a good thing. But I think my stuttering perhaps was one of the best things that ever happened to me. Mm-hmm.
And you've mentioned some of the great leaders from America's past. Who are some contemporary influences on your life, on your vision for political leadership?
Well, I think a number. Jack Kemp, who is a congressman from New York. Jack was on Appropriations Committee with me and always worked on human rights and religious freedom. Another is Congressman Tony Hall, a Democrat, a member who is my best friend from Congress. We were in a small group for 30. We're still in the same group, but we started 32 years ago, a small group kind of built around the Clapham Society, the same type of environment that William Wilberforce, who abolished the slave trade in England. Another mentor was Chuck Colson. I used to call Chuck. One of my kids worked for Chuck, and I was actually in the Nixon administration when all that took place, and at that time I thought, you know, Colson. But then I read about Colson. I developed a friendship with him. Many times I would call Chuck Colson on a Sunday. We would talk about, big votes that I had. But I think Jack Kemp, Tony Hall, Chuck Colson, President Reagan. I always admired Reagan. He kind of had a good tone, very winsome, but very, very strong. He was always, you know, President Reagan said the words in the Constitution and the words in the Declaration of Independence were a covenant, not only with the people in Philadelphia in 1776 or 1787 when the Constitution was ratified, but they were a covenant with the entire world. And Reagan always spoke out for human rights and for religious freedom. But I think I'd say Colson, President Reagan, former Congressman Tony Hall, and former Congressman Jack Kemp, who has since passed away.
Talk a little bit about your relationship with Tony Hall, because that was a across the party divide, friendship and collaboration of the sort that seems increasingly rare these days in Washington. Say a little bit about how the two of you got to know one another and the ways in which you collaborated.
Well, I joined a group in 1982. Current Senator Dan Coats was in the group and some others. And we became kind of a band of brothers. We would meet every Tuesday and we would pray with one another and talk. And Tony, in 84, had just gotten back from Ethiopia, urged me to go. If you recall, there was a major famine. And I got waylaid in a refugee camp where people were dying, and it's a long story. But that changed everything. I mean, I'd actually never been out of the country, really, before I got elected to Congress. I went to Canada once. We, in Ethiopia during the famine, saw people dying. And then Tony took me on a trip to Romania in 1985. Where Ceausescu, who was the president of Romania, was one of the most evil. People would come up and put notes in my hands saying, my husband's in prison, my son's in prison. Those two trips, as part of our little group, kind of a covenant group, really kind of were shaping, changed a lot of what I did or altered what I did. And I think in our group, you know, Tony is a Democrat, used to contribute to my campaign. He would... and we're still friends. We still meet and we still talk. In fact, Tony will join. We're going to be with Tony here at Baylor in, I think, October 7th. They're having a hunger summit And Tony and I are going to be on the program together. But we became very close friends, and our wives are very close. My wife is in a small group with Tony's wife, with Joanne Kemp, Jack Kemp's wife. And so it was a big deal. It really shaped and helped. And I think everyone ought to be in a group, not a large group, but a group of small group where if you're a man, they will – other men you can talk to and they'll tell you, you know, I think you're going wrong. I don't think that's right. Or a place you can honestly come and be very open. And so – but that was kind of what shaped a lot of what I have done.
Say a little more about what the collaboration with Tony allowed you to do and allowed him to do that you probably couldn't have done otherwise just as individuals. I mean, it strikes me that we typically think of leadership as individuals who exercise great influence. But one of the things you're pointing out here is that leadership in a collaborative way has an important role in our public life. What do you think the two of you were able to do together that you couldn't have done just as individuals?
Well, I think the Bible tells you two are better than one. When one falls down, the other can pick you up. I think the combination of a Democrat and a Republican kind of made a difference. So we came back from our trip. Congressman Smith, Tony was with us, Congressman Chris Smith from New Jersey, one of the best members of Congress. Pat put in a bill to take away the most favored nation trading status from Romania. And the administration fought us, the Congress fought us. And I think the combination of here's a conservative Republican and a moderate or liberal Democrat kind of coming together really made a difference. So we passed last year a national commission to solve the problem of hunger. It's still meeting. They'll be reporting the end of this year. Tony and I worked together. Here you had a Democrat and a Republican. We also passed the Chuck Colson Commission, Prison Reform Commission. Chuck was a leader in reforming. Our prisons are horrible places. I mean, we're putting people in prison. They come out worse than they go in. The fact that it was a bipartisan thing. And so a lot of what we did, religious freedom, human rights, hunger, we came at it in a different way. They would see, here's a conservative Republican. No, well, here's a Democrat. Well, they're together. And then I think we spent a lot of time together on the floor of the House. So I think the combination was different, and I think they helped both of us be able to do what we thought was appropriate and good for the country.
Good. Thank you. For those of you who are just joining us, this is KWBU Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Tom Hibbs, talking today with Frank Wolf, former U.S. Congressman from Virginia, and now the Jerry and Susie Wilson Chair in Religious Freedom at Baylor University. Let's continue talking a bit about this collaboration that you had across the partisan divide with Tony Hall. One of the things that you mentioned, in addition to these projects that you worked on together, legislative projects, is that you met regularly to talk and to pray. What do you think is and what in your experience has been the connection between your life of faith and your life of public leadership?
Well, the group we were in and were in and still in is modeled after what William Wilberforce had, called the Clapham Society. As you know, William Wilberforce was a member of the British Parliament who worked 33 years. It took him to abolish the slave trade. Faith has been important. We don't break it down by denominations. Basically, we meet around the principles of Jesus. Jesus is appealing. You can be Catholic, Protestant. You can be whatever denomination. You can be whatever. You can have no, but the principle, you know, Jesus talking about feeding the poor, the hungry, speaking out for the oppressed. And so that was really very important. Sometimes we would talk about politics, but we always try to bring it back, kind of what would Jesus do in this case if you were. Secondly, it was a place to go that was a safe place to throw out an idea that nobody was going to be, you know, that's a crazy idea. We could bounce it off. And the fact that Tony was a Democrat and we had other Republicans, it sort of was almost a sounding board or a place to go to kind of try things. Lastly, I had some tough votes, you know, and a couple of times I had a break from my party. Tony would come over and kind of be with me, Dan Coats, on a very big vote I had, which was a kind of a, you know, Coats would come. So it was kind of like a maybe a support group even, that we were kind of together. And at times that was very, very helpful to have.
We seem to see in our culture a lack of this sort of cross-party collaboration today, and lack of leadership in reaching out to those who are on the other side. What do you think are the is that as much of a problem as it's perceived to be? What are the sources of it, and how might we overcome it?
Well, I think you can overcome it by taking the teachings of Jesus and apply them, you know, love one another and everything else. And again, I'm a conservative Republican. Don't let this be – look at my voting record. You can see. I think there's a big problem in the country. Our nation – and I worry more for my kids and grandkids. As I said, I have 16 grandkids. We have never been more divided in my lifetime than we are now. We're divided racially. We're divided different groups. We're divided. You know, my father came back and you talked at a red state or a blue state, he wouldn't know what you're talking about. My dad was interested in politics, but he wouldn't know. He would say, Frankie, what's a red state or what's a blue state? So we're just polarized. And I think part of it is there are a lot of reasons, which I think would take too long for this show, but it's. It's the instant, it's the cable, it's the instant response, it's Twitter, it's Facebook, it's, you know, no time for reflection. I just think it's moving too fast. You say something at 1 hour and the next hour you're on television being clobbered or being hailed, and I think there's not the time for the reflection. But this is not good for the country. And I think, quite frankly, America is facing – I know this is a controversial statement to make, but America is facing economic and moral decline. We're not in it, but we're approaching it. And if you read Neil Ferguson's book called Civilization, decline comes fast. And so there are things happening in this country that if my mom and dad could come back – and see, they wouldn't quite understand where we are. President Reagan and Tip O'Neill used to meet after 5 o'clock. If you remember, when President Reagan was shot, took him to George Washington Hospital. Tip O'Neill, and I don't think they were really close friends. I'm not saying that O'Neill and Reagan were buddies. And Tip O'Neill went to the hospital and prayed for Reagan. And so I just think, also I think we're seeing the decline of culture and we're seeing less. I think the faith community is having a less of an impact, and everything that happens, and this is again slightly controversial, but everything that happens is downstream. What happens in Congress is downstream from culture. What's ever happened in culture takes place in Congress. What takes place in culture sometimes is downstream which takes place in the faith community. So I think a lot would – if the faith community would be, and I think the teachings of Jesus, regardless of whatever your beliefs are. I mean, nobody can argue, feed the poor, feed the hungry, speaks out for the oppressed, takes care of the widow and orphan. But I think we're in trouble, and I think we are facing decline. And once we enter decline – we're not there yet, but you can almost see we're at the door. Plus, $18 trillion of debt we owe to the Chinese who have Catholic bishops under house arrest, Protestant pastors in jail, are plundering Tibet, are stealing our technology. And so, I mean, my father couldn't understand that. So I think we're in trouble, but I think we can reverse it. I think decline is a is a choice. It isn't a destiny. It isn't a you shall be. But unfortunately, some of the choices we're making are not good.
Do you see examples or hopeful signs outside of politics of leadership?
I think there's a lot of hope. Yeah, I think, you know, I don't want, hey, 16 grandkids, you can't. I mean, yeah, I think there's a lot. I think a lot of the young people, I think, yeah, I think there's a lot of good things. I just don't think they're happening so much in Washington. They're not happening with the media. I mean, it is actually hard now to watch some of the TV shows and to be sitting there with your grandkids, even at 6 and 7 o'clock in the evening. I mean, some of the ads even are almost so, there's a lot of good things. There are a lot of kind things, a lot of caring things. People are feeding the poor and people are doing. There's work being done in prisons. Prison Fellowship is doing a great job. Yeah, there are a lot of – the Salvation Army does a lot of things. The Catholic Relief, food banks. And yeah, there's a lot of good things. What I'm talking about is more as the culture that we now have that's running the country.
For those of you who are just joining us, this is KWBU Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Tom Hibbs talking today with Frank Wolf, former U.S. Congressman from Virginia, now the Jerry and Susie Wilson Chair in Religious Freedom at Baylor University. Frank, let's talk a little more about this was touched upon in your comments about your collaboration with Tony Hall. But you were known during your time in Congress for many things, but perhaps chief among them was taking a leadership role on the issues of global religious freedom. Say a little bit more about how you came to get involved. I mean, you mentioned trips that you made with Tony, but how you got involved in that, what you did as a leader in Congress, and then maybe we can talk a little bit about where the situation is now. But begin by saying something about how you got involved and then what you did in Congress as a leader to try and bring attention to this issue and to have the U.S. government address it.
Well, the two trips for the first 4 years in Congress, I never was interested in these issues. And the December 84 trip to Ethiopia was life-changing. I got waylaid in a refugee camp run by World Vision, and right next was Mother Teresa's camp up in Alamata in Ethiopia. And then the 85 trip to Romania, where churches were being bulldozed and synagogues were being bulldozed and people were being thrown into jail, and it was what they call the Romanian Securitate followed us. Those were life-changing trips, and many times Tony and I, we were going to Blood Diamonds. We had legislation to deal with the Blood Diamonds in Sierra Leone. We went, Tony and I and Congressman Joe Pitts were the first members to go to Afghanistan when the war broke out. Seeing when you go in, it's one thing to read about something and see a movie or read a report, but when you can see it and feel it, touch it, taste it, smell it, and hear the stories of the individuals, it sort of is a life change. And when we were in Iraq in January, we were in a camp with a man whose wife had cancer. She died, and he told the story. ISIS came in, took over his village. A couple days later, he took his wife to Mosul. Mosul was where the Nineveh plains, where Jonah is buried and where Jonah's tomb was just blown up. And ISIS denied his wife a treatment for her cancer. She had breast cancer. And they said, "We will only treat you if you convert." She said she will not deny Christ. She refused. He refused. She dies. Now, I don't know, somebody, if my wife, we've been married for 53 years, if somebody said, I would probably say, I want to help my wife. But he did not and she did not. And if you look at that, to be with people like that, and if you make the comparison, even in the Bible, Peter ate with Jesus, saw Jesus walk on the water, and denied Jesus three times. Here's a guy in Iraq who doesn't deny Jesus, his wife, and so to be with people like that is, and there are people like that in Sudan, there are people like all over the world. I mean, China will be the largest Christian nation in 2030. The church is growing. So I think being and seeing and feeling and touching and tasting and being with those people, I think, has made a difference.
Could you say, as we're heading toward the end of this wonderful conversation, what would it mean currently for the U.S. government to exercise leadership with respect to international religious freedom?
Well, I think that's one of the failures of both political parties. We are not. Right now, genocide is taking place in Iraq and Syria. More biblical activity took place in Iraq than any other country other than Israel. Abraham's from Iraq. Ezekiel's buried in Iraq. Daniel lived in Iraq. Daniel's buried in Iraq. Rebecca lived in Iraq. Rachel for such a time. Esther for such a time. Like, we're just failing. And so I think for America to provide the leadership, and it always has been bipartisan. President Reagan, Republican. Scoop Jackson, a Democrat. Tom Lantos, a Democratic member from California, a Holocaust survivor, and Congressman Henry Hart, a Republican. These have always been a bipartisan issue. And as Reagan said, the words in the Constitution, the words in the Declaration of Independence were a covenant, not only with the people in Philadelphia, but with the nun in Erbil, Iraq, with the student in Tiananmen Square, with the Nigerian girl in Boko Haram, as Boko Haram is killing. So I think America needs to provide the leadership. And it says in Luke, to whom much is given, much is required.
What practically could we do as Americans, and especially as a government, to exercise leadership on this issue?
ISIS is coming here. ISIS is a direct threat to the United States. We need to be involved. One, we should call it officially, this is genocide. The administration and the Congress and the UN should call this genocide. Secondly, that would honor the people there, but help us put in place things to be doing. Thirdly, there are 180 Americans that have gone to fight with ISIS. I mean, we're seeing the impact in this country. What took place at Fort Hood by Major Hassan? Major Hassan was radicalized by Anwar al-Awlaki, who was out in Yemen. It is coming here. So America has to provide the leadership, and the world is looking for us to provide. We need the Egyptians on the ground. We need the Saudis on the ground. We need the Turks on the ground. But America has to provide the leadership. Right now, they do not see. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who gave his life because he stood up to the Nazis, said, not to speak is to speak, not to act is to act. So if we don't speak, we're actually saying we don't care. We don't act. So I think to provide the leadership, there's a story that the Soviet foreign minister said to Secretary Shultz during the Reagan administration. He said, every time we're in the White House with Reagan, the first thing he talks about is human rights and religious freedom. Secretary Shultz said, well, that's interesting. Every time I'm with him, that's what he talks about first, human rights and religious freedom. We need the leadership from Washington, from this country.
Do you see signs that there are people interested in this who could have an impact?
Not now. I don't. I want to say I think on both sides, I have not seen that yet. But it's we're early. But everything, again, is downstream from culture. Whatever's taking place in culture will have an impact on the Congress. The Congress doesn't just come in and do things. It waits to see what it's hearing. So I think we can make that. The church ought to speak. The organized church, Catholic, Protestant, Jewish, ought to speak on this issue. That will impact culture. Culture will force the Congress to do something and force the administration. But so now I'm not seeing that much.
Yeah, so we actually need leadership outside of the political order on this and perhaps other issues to prod the political leadership to exercise their proper role.
We do, Tom. You know, the world failed in the Holocaust. The world let Srebrenica take place. The world let Rwanda took place, the genocide in Rwanda. We now know what's taking place. With the internet, you can – when ISIS does something, they put it on the internet. We now know, and so – yeah, we need to provide the leadership. And keep in mind, this is not over there. There was just a young man from my former congressional district that was just arrested for aiding ISIS, living in Northern Virginia in one of the most affluent areas. Mm-hmm. It's coming here. And so I think we can't just say we're not going to focus on it. We got to deal with it globally. We need the Arab nations with us. The Saudis have to be with us. Qatar has to be with us. The Turks have to be with us. Jordan wants to be and looking for a leadership. We're just not giving it yet.
Thank you, Frank, for this wonderful conversation. And thank you for the honor of your presence here at Baylor and working with us and with our students. We're glad to have you.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.